Hey, everybody, join us as we delve into our favorite dark tales and paranormal mysteries.
Venture with us beyond the safe places that exist in daylight as we go
beyond the shadows. True crime.
Paranormal.
Hauntings.
UFOs.
Cryptids and unsolved mysteries.
Conspiracy theories.
Past lives.
Reincarnation.
And all the like are just a few of the topics that we will tackle.
If it haunts your fucking dreams, then it will be on our show.
Shadows where you found me at. You can't see me in the deepest blacks. When your heart start racing and you see the cracks, all these creepy things that you might attract. All the demons be where the action's at. So listen up if you want it. UFOs, all them ghosts, we got everything that you want. Whoa.
Do you know what the most frightening thing in the world is?
Hi, and welcome back to episode 75 of Beyond the Shadows.
Welcome back, Shadow People. We are going to give you a bonus episode here. We are going to finish out what we started last week.
Hopefully you guys are having a better week than we've had here in Southern Maine the last couple days.
Yeah, for sure. It's been rough around here.
We all lost power last Wednesday. We're just most everybody's just getting it back now. I got mine back yesterday.
I think I got mine like the night before Ryan did. And boy, does that suck, man.
It does.
It's old real fast.
The generator gets expensive real fast.
Yeah, we had trees down everywhere, about a foot and a half of the heaviest goddamn snow I've ever seen in my life. My
school was canceled.
Yep, twice. I couldn't even snowblow it. It was so heavy, the snowblower just died.
Wasn't possible.
Nope. Yeah.
My tire popped off. Yeah. Snow was that thick, my tire popped off.
No doubt. So we're not complaining, but we're totally complaining.
So we're about 2 hours, give or take, from the full solar eclipse coming this afternoon.
Big things coming, apparently. Yeah. The world's going to end or something.
Apocalypse.
Yep.
So in the news this week, we get a 9-year-old in Oroville, California. He shows a dedication that definitely Scott or I never would have.
Not a chance, man. Not a chance.
He missed the school bus, so he jacked his mom's car to drive himself to school.
At 9.
Yeah.
I have a 7-year-old, almost 8. There's zero chance he could ever figure out how to drive a car.
Wouldn't even be able to see over the
out
the window at all, I don't think.
Your boy might be able to figure it out. I can see this happening to you, actually. This might be around the corner for you.
But yeah, he wouldn't be going to school.
No. He'd be leaving school.
I could see him jack my car, but he sure as shit would be heading to school.
He'd be going the other way. Swing by and pick up my boy, and they'd be off.
Road trip.
Yeah.
So police actually witnessed the car stopped in the middle of an intersection, so they used their PA system to tell the car to move. He then moved through the intersection into a gas station parking lot and then back directly into the patrol car.
Yeah. Up to then, he must have been doing all right.
But yeah, he was literally, when they finally pulled him over, he was right next to the school.
He'd almost made
another
it.
10
he knew
feet,
the directions
another 10
and everything.
Feet, he was there.
Dude, I don't know what would make a 8-year-old kid want to get to school, so maybe a 9-year-old girl. I don't know. There's zero chance that it would have been where I was headed.
Had to be a girl, I think. Certainly wasn't for the math quiz, right?
Not missing the fucking quiz.
Zero chance I'm missing that.
So he crashes into the car, pokes his head out, and says, sorry, just trying to get to school.
I mean, how do you fault the kid? He's really just trying to get to school.
So they got it all sorted out, and he pretty much got the worst possible punishment, which was that they made him go to school.
Yeah.
So one other story. There's a disgruntled and really stupid customer in Willowick, Ohio. Pulled a gun on a Burger King drive-thru employee for giving him too good of a deal.
Yep, he got a discount, and he is not for that.
Not acceptable.
Unacceptable.
Howard Vernon was working the drive-thru when a customer came up, ordered 2 sausage, egg, and cheese croissants, a sausage biscuit, and hash browns. So Vernon quotes him that he owed about $8, and the dude answers, that can't be right. It should be at least $11. So they argue back and forth for a minute. The guy speeds off without his food, comes back a few minutes later, pulls out a gun and threatens to kill Vernon.
For giving him a $3-4 discount.
For undercharging.
Undercharging him. What is this bastard going to do when he gets his senior citizen discount? Right. He's going to kill people all over the place.
The guy sped away, and as of, at least when the article was written, he still hasn't been caught. But I think there's a pretty good chance he's like on a used car lot right now, trying to dicker the price up. You're asking $15,000? No way. $17,500? You're not going to fuck me. Come on, charge me for undercoating.
You get a coupon for that? I'll kill you, motherfucker. Oh, anyways.
Good times.
Yeah.
You got this week off again, Florida. You've had a couple weeks off recently.
It's two. We have to have one for Florida.
No, the lady that set the fire last week, she was Florida.
Right.
But
she was the
before,
Floridian. Yep.
All right, so we're going to get to this week's episode.
Part two, Terry Lovelace.
Be right back.
All right, so when we left off last week, I believe Terry's wife had just brought him to the hospital. Him and Toby had been on their camping trip. They got taken, you know, didn't remember much about it at first, but then they sped off in their car and they got home and they're in really rough shape. So I'm going to start from there. So his wife takes him after gives him a hot bath. He has a nice cool bath, takes some aspirin. His temp's almost 104.
Yeah.
So she takes him to the hospital. Terry's admitted to the hospital, diagnosed with acute dehydration. He has red burns all over his entire body, including his eyes. He had what was referred to as arc welder burns. The cornea of his eye had been burned. I've had welders. It's welder's flash. You know, I've had this. Oh, my God. It's horrible. I got flash when I was working at a company by, you know, the arc of someone else welding. It feels like you got piles of sand in your eyes. It's so uncomfortable.
Yeah, sounds unpleasant.
Oh, it's terrible. So he had a room to himself at the hospital, which was rare. But he thought maybe they're getting special attention because he worked there. You know, he worked in the ER. So in his room, they kept the lights turned down. They had two IVs running on him full tilt because the dude was, even after all that he drank through that time, he was still crazy dehydrated. It was the evening of the second night, and Terry knew that he was going to be going home the following day. He was getting pain meds every 4 hours. When the night nurse came in, these two guys in blue business suits followed her into the room. She turned around kind of puzzled, and when they pulled out their credentials and showed her that they were from the OSI. The OSI is the Office of Special Investigation. It's the investigative branch of the Air Force. So I remember dealing with these guys when I was in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
So it would be like the equivalent to NCIS for the Navy or whatever. You know, it's the law section, but, you know, special cases and stuff like that. I think I've said it before. When we got briefed by the OSI is when we were in Saudi Arabia. They told us not to talk to – hope none are listening out there – not to talk to the French because we were stationed with them, and they are allies with some people that we're not. You know, so there was all careful what you say to who you're saying it to. You think you're fine, but anyways, sorry, French listeners. That's just the truth. So the one guy who did all the talking was about 50 years old. He had a flat top haircut. Terry thought he was an intimidating guy, but Terry also thought he wanted to be intimidating. These two gentlemen worked together. It was a captain and a major. The younger guy was in his 30s. He went to the bottom of Terry's bed. He cranked up the bed and sat Terry up straight. So this is the old hospital beds. This is 77.
Yeah.
So they got a crank at the end of the bed. He cranks up the head of the bed. So he's sitting up looking right at him. The major, who was the guy in charge, scooped everything off of Terry's tray table, and he slid the tray table under his chest. Terry referred to this individual, he calls him Special Agent Gregory. Obviously not his real name. He said, I'm going to be in charge of your case. And Terry's like, oh, shit, I got a case? And that scared him. He thought, God, what'd we do? You know, because at this point, they'd just gone camping, and then this shit happened, and they bounced, you know? He thought, what, did we burn down the forest? Did we not put out the fire, you know? Why are they here? Why are these guys coming to talk to us? And then he thought, oh, I bet this has something to do with what happened. They must know, you know. He laid out some forms for Terry to sign. He referred to Terry as son. That degrading It's a Southern thing too, but very, very degrading. This is
certain circumstances. That's obnoxious.
This guy was a Southern guy. You know, he had a very thick draw, and like he said, he was an intimidating dude. But like he said, he wanted to be intimidating. He referred to Terry as son, and Terry said, "Sir, am I in trouble?" And he looked amused. He looked over at the captain. He chuckled, and he said, "Son, would we be here if you weren't in trouble?" Terry claims he thought, I'll cooperate, but I'm not going to tell him that I saw a UFO. He was afraid that he'd end up in the psych ward. And I can tell you, being in the military, went back then especially, I don't know, even later on when I was in, you didn't talk to the medical health stuff. It would end your career.
Yeah.
You know, if you went to mental health back then, your career was over. They, like, can't trust you to be a soldier or keep secrets or whatever. So that was it. Everybody knew that was the end of your career if you went to mental health. So he claims he didn't want to tell him that he had saw it, because that's where he'd be locked up on the mental ward. The questions they were asking Terry, they were asking in like a way that he found it to be quite intimidating. You know, he was pressuring Terry to get what he wanted out of him. Major Gregory wanted to know, why did you have a little campsite out there and then you go and abandon it all of a sudden?
Ran out of beer.
Yeah. He said, the only thing I could think, son, is maybe you and your buddy had a little marijuana plot out there. Is that what's going on here? Terry thought, what if somebody did have an actual small marijuana plot out there and it got blamed on him, you know? Because, you know, back then, that would have been a huge deal.
Oh, yeah.
It isn't like today where there's literally one on every corner. But, you know, that was crazy illegal back then. Pot's more illegal than methamphetamine in a lot of places, which is crazy. So this actually scared him. This intimidated him a lot. Special Agent Gregory continued with the questions. Then he laid these forms out, and he read Terry his rights. Terry asked him, what have I done wrong? What am I being accused of? He says, son, these are waivers and consent. Terry wanted to know before he signed. He said, what is this? What are these? And he said, I told you, son, they're waivers and consent. They give us the right to take a look into your house, see if you don't have a big bag of marijuana or something. You don't have anything illegal in your house, do you? No? Well, then there shouldn't be any objection to signing these documents, should there?
I'd object just out of principle. Fuck you.
Yeah.
I'm not signing them.
You would. You know how I was. That's exactly how I was. But when you're in the service like this, you feel like you got no rights at all. And they're actually, I remember I was intimidated by my TI when I joined, and she was a tiny little lady. She was just so scary. So he said, you don't have anything illegal in your house. He said, well, there shouldn't be any objection to signing these. Do you have something to hide from us? He said, no, sir. And Terry signed all six documents, never reading a one.
Ugh.
Yep. So the nurse came back and she said, Dr. Sanders really wants Sergeant Lovelace to have his medication. They said, well, we're done here. The captain leaves and the nurse gives his medication. She leaves and then the major, Special Agent Gregory, shuts the door. He pulls a chair up and sits down next to Terry. He says in a whisper, see, I know you two knuckleheads stumbled onto something out there, didn't you? Terry didn't say anything. And he said, well, I think you know what I'm talking about, don't you? And Terry said, no, sir. He said, all I want to know is how many pictures you took of it and where's your film? Terry told him, I don't know what you're talking about. So Terry wasn't. He wasn't going to tell him that he saw a UFO, what happened especially. Terry said that when he was in the hospital, he was given a type of pill. He had a whole bunch of medication, but he was given a type of pill that he'd never seen before. He's a medic, you know, he works in the ER, he recognizes a lot of this stuff. But he believed this pill was making him feel crazy. He couldn't remember shit after taking it. He recalls thinking, I really need to stop taking this. His wife thought the same thing. You know, what's going on? You're acting kind of goofy. So he started flushing it down the toilet. He took this one pill and he knew what else he was getting. And he started flushing it. He wasn't taking it anymore. He said each night while at the hospital, a nurse would round by his room and do a pill count to make sure that he'd taken all his pills.
Yeah.
He said the nurse there, he'd never seen her before. He worked in this hospital. He'd never seen the nurse before. She wore no rank, had no ID badge, no nothing.
That's shady.
Yep. So they sent Terry home with a 2-week supply of that medication to take, but he never took any of it. Terry had asked the nurse that he worked with, you know, he's like, what kind of medication is this? And she said she had no idea. She said that it didn't actually come from the hospital's pharmacy, but it came directly from Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. So this medication wasn't something that was in their pharmacy.
Yeah.
So when Terry was being discharged from the hospital, the hospital commander and a couple other officers came in and they told him, you're ordered to have no contact with Sergeant Tobias. That means no notes, no telephone calls, no messages through third parties, nothing. Do you understand me? Terry really didn't know what to do. So he actually didn't want anything to do with Toby. You know, he said that after he rode in that car, everything kind of changed. So, I mean, this wasn't a big deal, but he had heard through the grapevine that Terry was cut orders to go to Japan. And these orders were cut at, like, light speed. This is not soon after he's out of the hospital. This guy's already got orders to leave. So, Toby, he's going to be gone in a matter of just a couple weeks. At this point, Terry tells his wife, he goes, I really want to say goodbye to Toby. You know, it had been a couple weeks had gone by. Terry was coming home from the grocery store, and his wife, she's driving the car. And Terry said, look, I want to stop by Toby's house. It's just 2 blocks from here. I just want to run in and say goodbye to the guy. You know, he said he knew he was gone. This was his friend forever. Even though he didn't want anything to do with him, he at least wanted to tell him.
You got to assume they're watching you, man.
Yeah, absolutely. She says, Terry, you know the hospital commander told you to stay away. Don't mess with these OSI people, she said. I'm afraid of them. And Terry said, I know. I understand. I'm just going to tell them goodbye. So Terry went in the front door, and they were packing. Toby's wife turned around and gave Terry a look and said, you're not supposed to be here. Terry thought that she actually had blamed him for what happened to Toby. But then Toby came around the corner, and Terry said he looked really bad. He was wearing a dirty T-shirt and jeans. And he said he was normally a really clean-cut guy, you know. Hair all done perfect, grooming and everything. Mm-hmm. So Terry was standing in the hallway. He rounded the corner and held out his hand. They made eye contact and shook hands. Terry said, I just came to wish you good luck. I heard you're going to Japan. Toby said, yeah. He reeked of vodka. He looked like he hadn't slept and was doing some heavy drinking. Toby looked at Terry and he said, it happened, didn't it, Terry? They heard us. They did, didn't they? And Terry said, yeah, it happened. It all happened. You're not losing your mind, brother. It happened. Toby said, why? Why did it happen? Terry said, I don't know why. And then he turned, ran out the door. Terry ran back to his car, and his wife drove him home. So once he gets home, he opens the door, and the phone's already ringing. This is before cell phones. This is when your phone is on the wall. Yeah. Said the phone was ringing as the door was opening. He picked it up and said, Sergeant Lovelace. And it was Special Agent Gregory on the other end. He said, well, you just couldn't do it, could you? He said, you had to go and violate an order of a commissioned officer, didn't you?
Had to see that one coming.
Yeah, yeah, you're asking for it.
Big brother's always what.
In the dark forest lies a secret, told in broken stories by those who bore witness, a monster, a murder, a long-forgotten homestead. I'm on the search for the ghosts who haunt these places, and I want you to come along. Welcome to Tales, Trails, and Taverns. Here I take an active approach to finding places that people might warn you not to go to. Haunted trails, abandoned towns, old taverns where you might catch a glimpse of a long-deceased patron. Look, you're probably not going to find me trekking through Arizona looking to have a run-in with a skinwalker, and you certainly won't catch me playing with a Ouija board, but I have spent at least the last 10 years seeking out creepy, haunted, and abandoned places to explore. So lace up your boots, grab a working flashlight, and join me as I tell the tales, hike the trails, and grab a cold pint at the local tavern. You can find the podcast on Apple, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. You can find show updates on Instagram, TikTok, Threads, Facebook, and YouTube. And also check out the blog at TalesTrailsAndTaverns.com. And now, I hope you enjoy the rest of the show.
I just want to know if you found your film of your camera. If you found your film yet, you have anything for me? Terry said, no. He said, I want to know what Toby gave you and what you gave Toby. Nothing. I just went to say goodbye to the guy. The major swore at him for a little bit and then hung up. Somewhere around 5 weeks after his discharge from the hospital, Terry was told by the squadron commander that the OSI was sending a car to pick him up. Soon after, a blue security police car pulled up for him. A senior airman got out and asked, are you Sergeant Lovelace? He opened the door, Terry got in the back of the police car, and they drove about a mile up the road to the OSI headquarters. Terry said he had to go through a series of doors. It was like the double doors, you know, kind of thing where you see the person and they buzz you through. Mm-hmm. And opens up the door and Terry follows the guy down the hallway. On either side of the hallways were interrogation rooms. He opened one of the doors and he said, someone will be with you shortly. Of course, you know what shortly is when they do that.
Yeah, a couple hours.
Yep. They noticed there was a mirror. He noticed there was a mirror on the wall in the interrogation room. I mean, that's for one thing. It's only, you know, you're not in there to do your hair and clean up, see how you're looking. That's just for people to look through. One-way mirrors. Or, yeah, two-way mirror. The fuck are they called? They're two-way mirrors. Yeah. Terry sat in the room for over 3 hours. Then around noon, the two agents came in, talking amongst themselves. They're just completely ignoring Terry. You know, this is more of their head games.
Oh, yeah.
Special Agent Gregory said, well, you know you're going to be hypnotized today, son. Are you ready? Sir, I'm going to be what? He said, you're going to be hypnotized. So we're going to help you get to the truth. We're going to make sure you're not lying to us, son. You haven't been lying to us, have you? Terry said, no, everything I told you is the truth. He said, well, then you shouldn't mind a little hypnosis here. Help you to relax. But why? Said Terry, starting to object. That's when he switched gears. He turned on his tough guy face. He pulled out a piece of paper out of his briefcase. Those papers that were laid out in front of him in the hospital that he had signed without reading. Mm-hmm. One of them was his consent to hypnotic regression, and it had something to the effect of with chemical enhancements. He slammed it down on the desk in front of him, and he points at it and said, is that your signature, son? Terry said, yes, sir. That's all the why I need. Then another major showed up. They let him into the room. This guy wore standard issue blue pants, the light blue shirt, you know, the casual Air Force uniform. He walked in, and he completely ignored Terry, just like before. For a couple minutes, he's talking to the agents about fishing or golf. Terry couldn't remember. But then he finally turned his attention to Terry. He holds out his hand and he says to him, good to finally meet you, Sergeant. How are you? Terry said, fine, sir. He shook his hand and he sat in the chair and rolled it right over next to Terry up in his personal space. He said, Terry, well, I see that you're from St. Louis, Missouri. He starts rattling off some landmarks and nods and he's making small talk. And this goes on for a while, and Terry actually said for an instance he started feeling comfortable with the guy. Then he started thinking, wait a minute, you know, I'm not this interesting. This guy's showing way too much interest in
you.
So,
been doing his homework.
Exactly. He said, for today's little exercise, will you call me Brad? That is my name. And Terry said, yes, sir. And for today's little exercise, may I call you Terry? That is your name. And Terry said, yes, sir. And this is important. Do you trust me? And Terry thought, do I trust you? What kind of question is that to ask a stranger? But, you know, he knew that he had to go along. So he's like, he said, sure, I trust you, Brad. He said, the way that he was talking to him wasn't normal. You know, he's doing some kind of head game type stuff.
Jedi mind trick.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He said, I read the statement that you've given these agents, and I was wondering if there's anything you'd like to tell me. I'll ask them to leave, and you and I can have a little discussion just between ourselves. And Terry, if there's anything you need to change in your statement, we can fix it now. He said, sir, I told the agents everything. You're not thinking about withdrawing your consent, are you, Terry? Terry said, well, sir, yeah, do I have that option? Can I do that? He said, well, sure. And he turns the floor back to Investigator Gregory. He says, I can tear these papers up right now. You can go home, and we'll see you at your court-martial. If that's what you want, that's what we can do. So Terry went along with him, a fear that he was going to get thrown in jail. And it sounds kind of silly the way it goes down, but this is how they work, especially in the military. They're very, you know, there's a lot of vague threats. You know, that's how I found it to be all the time. Of course, I was a fuck up in the military too, so I had a lot of authority yelling at me. This sounds like a few things I went through. So the major, the one that came into the room, not Gregory, but the other major, put Terry under hypnosis, and they used a drug by the name of sodium amytal, not sodium pentothal, but sodium amytal. If you look out there, I don't know a whole lot about this drug, but it's supposed to bring like a lot of thoughts forward. Like it reminds me of what's that? I'm going to forget the name of the movie.
So it's not the truth serum, but
it's not the truth serum. It's like it, but it also helps bring stuff that you wouldn't remember. It's not like stuff that you're hiding, but it's bringing forward thoughts that you didn't even know that you knew. You know, like what's on page 4 of this, and you're like, well, I have no idea. And then they ask you when you're under this, you can recall that. It allows you to access those things that are suppressed. So Terry knew that he could resist hypnosis. You know, in back in the day, everybody knew that if you didn't want to be hypnotized, that you really couldn't be.
Yeah.
But he wasn't sure about the drug. You know, the drug. And when they gave it to him, it had an unexpected reaction for him. When they administered it, he said it was a pleasant flushness. He just felt, you know, like floating on a cloud kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The major said, you and Toby went on a little camping trip a couple weeks ago. Remember that? He said, yes, Brad. He said, you saw some funny lights in the sky. Is that right? Yes, Brad. I want you to tell me what you see. What are you seeing? Tell me. Terry said, they weren't stars at all. Were they, Terry? That wasn't Terry. That was the major said, they weren't stars at all. Were they, Terry? Terry said, no, they weren't. She said, who were they? He said, they were the star people. Terry thought, my God, that just came out of my mouth. And then it came forward that he did know them, that he had seen them before, that he knew them from his childhood. He said, yeah, I know them from when I was a child. They used to come and take me. It's like that suddenly all of that became part of Terry's consciousness. Once they administered this medication, all this came forward and he could remember. The major wanted him to answer questions about the inside of the ship. What he saw as he's walking through. Because of the sodium amytal and what Terry thought was faulty hypnosis, because Terry's trying, he said that he wanted to keep these memories. He didn't feel like when he was under hypnosis that he was really under hypnosis, but he was, because he told them everything. But he was trying everything he could to try to keep these memories and not have them erase them from his mind.
Yeah.
So he said if they were telling him to do something in his head, he was thinking to do the opposite. He tried to stop it from, you know, things being erased.
He's trying to resist their
Jedi. He's trying to resist the whole thing throughout the whole thing. Yeah. Terry remembers. He said, we were nude. I had my clothes in my hand, and so did Toby. He was standing next to me, and the only thing I could do was move my eyes. They were darting all around, trying to take in every single inch of things. Terry's thinking, I want to remember this. This is why he wanted to resist the hypnosis so bad. He wanted to remember what had happened to him when he was on the ship. He said he heard a woman screaming, a sharp, piercing scream as a reaction to pain. You know, he goes through talking about how you know when someone screams. You know if that's a scream of fear. You know scream of pain. You can just tell that. As a human, you know, someone's being hurt. And that's what he thought when he heard her. They're hurting her. He could also see to the right, there were some other human beings there. He didn't recall how many, but it was more than a dozen. And they were all in a similar situation. They were off to one side. They were in a separate group from him and Toby. These people were also holding their clothes in their hands. He could see that it was a mix of men, women, and children, and they were all crying. You remember that Toby was crying too after he got out of the, when he was in the tent. So Terry remembered there were some other humans on board that wore military uniforms. They wore tan-colored flight suits, and they had orange insignias on their shoulders. They wore combat boots, and they're all around the age of 22 or younger, with military-style haircuts. Terry thought they were actually members of the ship, crew members. because they all stayed together. He never heard them talk. But one of them was doing something like in the panel of the ship. They had slid a panel open and was working on something. And this is what made him think that these people were actually part of the crew. Mm-hmm. And that they were human, or at least they certainly looked human. And they all stayed in a group. They never were separated out like there was others on the ship that were. Said, and then there were all these gray guys all over the place, you know, the typical alien gray. Mm-hmm. But Terry doesn't think these are actual living beings. This is where I think we mentioned it in the first one.
Yeah.
He thinks there's some kind of combination of nanotechnology. He said quantum programming, you know, just like an artificial intelligence that would follow commands. He said that they manhandled them and stated they were really strong. So this is where I've heard different, because I've heard that some people say that they were strong, and in other ones, like it was Travis Walton, where he like pushed them right over and said that they like
bowling pins.
Yeah, they went over like they were nothing. But then Terry saw a taller guy. This guy wasn't gray. He was about 6 feet tall, and he had a chalky complexion with a pinkish color. So he's like chalky all over with a pink tone. He was actually wearing he was wearing clothing also. His eyes were bigger and oversized, but they were not like you see in the movies. They wrapped around his face. He had small holes for nostrils and slits for a mouth. He recalled there was one guy in particular who seemed to be in control. It seemed to Terry that he was running the show. Terry was straining his eyes to the left to see him. And as he's doing this, it turns his head and they lock eyes. And that was probably the most frightening aspect of being on the ship for Terry. What happened was when they locked eyes, it immediately was in his head. It was like he said it was downloading everything that was there. It knew him. It knew his wife. It knew his secrets. Everything about him. He said this guy was so far above him on the evolutionary ladder. He described it as if, you know how a dog looks up to like a person with their eyes or whatever. Yeah. He said he felt like it was like that. Like he was like a dog or a cat compared to this being. Terry remembered that him and Toby began to move along on what he believed was like a conveyor belt. Or they could have even been like floating along. Mm-hmm. And so they came across, as they're going through, they came across these tanks or like aquarium type tanks. The tanks were full of some type of pink fluid. As he went by, he could see that there was some sort of creature in the tanks. But wait, they weren't creatures at all. They looked to be human or human-like hybrids. So he's got all these tanks. This is like what you see on a sci-fi movie. Yeah. You know, as you're going by, there's this tank full. It's like they're growing humans. And then there was a third type entity. This one was the insectoid. Terry said he would have thought that this would have been the most frightening, but it wasn't. The guy that did the whole download to him was the most frightening of all. It was weird. He could hear Toby screaming, oh, my God, no, no. And the next thing he recalls, Terry himself is being levitated from his feet straight up and onto a table. It was a metal table like all of them actually described.
Yeah.
He was expecting it to be cold, but it wasn't. And then he realized it wasn't cold because there had been so many bodies on it before him. There was this insectoid thing. This thing, a lot of people who've been abducted and also have claimed to see it, they refer to it as Dr. Bug. It had a mantis look to it. You've heard of this, the mantis type alien. He said it had an insectoid-type mouth, and Terry was screaming. He said he'd fill his lung up with air, and he would scream as long and hard as he could, but he couldn't hear himself scream. And it really confused him, because he heard everybody else on the show. He heard Toby screaming. He heard the woman scream.
Yeah.
And the fact that he couldn't hear himself scream made him scream even more. And then he realized that his screaming was annoying Dr. Bug. He said that he was down by his feet doing something, and Terry's screaming. It turns his big bulbous head and gets down close to his. And Terry could hear him clearly in his own head. He wasn't speaking, but telepathy.
Yeah.
He heard him speak, and he was annoyed. He said, "Why are you screaming? Stop screaming. You know we don't hurt you. You know we take you back. Stop screaming." And he reached over and tapped Terry on the forehead. Terry was out cold. This mantic creature didn't seem to be the one that was in charge. it was the one that was in Terry's head. That's the one Terry was convinced was running the whole show. I think you would call, I don't know if those are like a humanoid when you're describing different alien types or whatever, but it's not one that I was familiar with.
Hi, I'm Katie.
And I'm Kelly.
And if you're looking for a super fun, awesome podcast to listen to, check us out.
All things outrageously dark, scary, beautiful, and totally true.
There's a lot of different types of the aliens described in this particular story all at the same
time. There was three different and humans and possible human hybrid, you know? So it's technically four. I mean, if you're counting the humans, but
you got to feel pretty low on the totem pole when an insect is your physician.
It touches a finger to your head and you're out cold.
If it was a spider, that would be it for me.
Just kill me now. So, I mean, this has got all gamuts of
So you got the grays, the humanoids, the insectoids.
And a lot of people who have been – I mean, Terry said – not Terry. Who was I talking about before?
Travis Walton.
Travis Walton said when he was up there, there was more than one. But he had like human looking, you know, they were like the Nordic type.
Yeah, the Nordics you call them.
Yeah. But this one, there was whatever was in the tank that they're growing, you know, is that a human hybrid or what is it?
It seems like that's probably what they're doing. They're collecting all this data from the people to make their own version.
That's what it always seems like. They're doing some kind of, you know, genetic research on humans or whatever. And that was around this time. You know, this is when all the alien stuff was happening through this time. Maybe they got what they needed, you know. So like I said, he didn't think this one was in charge. He was pretty sure it was the pink chalky dude. So anyways, Terry was screaming and this mantis just touched his finger to his head and then he was out. That was it. That he didn't remember anything after that on the plane. Throughout the hypnosis or anything, that was it. Terry did recall that during the hypnosis that the major seemed very bothered by the fact that Terry had seen other humans on board. He stated that when he went out of his way to tell Terry that wasn't a memory. You're misremembering that. You just need to forget that and move on. And, you know, that was really, for some reason, that's what really seemed to bother them the most. Not the fact that he was taken by aliens, but the fact that there was humans on board that seemed to be working with them.
That there's an insect flying a ship and shit. That's not a problem.
The bug thing's fine. But no, so, I mean, he throughout his time, he said there's a few things that he could think, you know, that maybe the aliens were working with the humans, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe they're working with them or maybe they can't stop it. You know, they're doing whatever and they're doing the hybrid stuff and they were hybrids. Or, you know, they could have just been recruits. They were wearing human clothing and all the sorts. So they're not really sure what it was, but he definitely knew that they didn't want him to remember it.
A lot of possibilities.
So after this, this is pretty much all they got out of Terry from the hypnosis. He wasn't supposed to remember anything, but he was able to. This actually brought up a lot of memories that he had before, is his claim. So he was allowed to return home. He went back to work like normal, but Toby never did return. And Terry never did get another chance to talk to him about the situation. You know, he was sent off to Japan. Yeah. And Terry finished out his enlistment and went on to have somewhat of a normal life. But his claims of visits, they don't actually stop there. He actually wrote a second book after this one. We're not going to get into all that. We're just specifically talking about what happened at Devil's Den.
Yeah.
But he said there was a few other incidents after the fact, and he remembered a lot of stuff from his childhood. Maybe we'll talk about that in a later episode. But he said later on in life, he did try to contact Toby, but he wasn't able to get in touch with him. But he did get in touch with his wife. And the two of them actually had split up and were no longer married. She said that Toby never recovered from whatever happened to him at Devil's Den. Terry believes it may have had something to do with the pills that the two of them were given. He thought maybe that they had given him some stuff that kind of made him went crazy.
Yeah.
You know?
Designed to wash the brain.
Yeah. Exactly. They're coming from Wright-Patterson. He said that Toby eventually ended up homeless and was living on the streets. And eventually he said that he passed away due to his drinking or whatever they'd done to him. So that's his claim. That's what happened. to Terry Lovelace at Devil's Den. Like I said, this isn't the end of his story.
Yeah.
It's the end of, you know, the big part. It's the, it all came back when he they found these implants in his knee.
So you were just referencing that he wrote a book or a couple books. So was he not explicitly told by the government to shut the fuck up? Because usually that's part of the threats, keep your mouth shut.
You know, he said that he wasn't supposed to talk to Toby about the situation. From what I've seen and read so far, he wasn't given like an ultimatum or anything like that. They did this, they sent Toby away, and he was not supposed to discuss it. I mean, is basically as far as that goes. I'm trying to remember if he had any NDAs or anything like that. He may have.
Well, it's usually the men in black that issue the threats.
Right, and that's what some people
– he got the men in blue here, so.
Yeah, he kind of described them as like they were the men in black, but they were, you know, it's the Air Force. They're in their blue suits and all that.
I believe in the men in black. I just think they're actual aliens, and they seem to issue pretty explicit threats when they do it.
Yeah, so he has a thing later on where he talks to – in further on down the road where he talks to an alien that comes to him or whatever about not discussing things because he was wanting to get this. Remember, he has this thing in his knee or whatever.
Yeah.
And he wants to go and talk about it. And they basically tell him not to. But it wasn't coming from – this wasn't coming from the Air Force because this is way later on down the road. Mm-hmm. He still gets his care from the VA. So he actually petitioned to get his x-rays, and I will post the x-rays that we talked. I've actually posted some of them, so if you go on social media. But he said there was a few x-rays that he never received, but he said he had to file a claim or whatever against the VA to get them, and they had to release them to him and everything.
Yeah.
But so with this one, there's some stuff that sounds compelling. There's also a lot of missing stuff, you know. I mean, why can't he, you know, have these things in his knees looked at? You know, he's got these – well, he claims that they came and they took them because they knew that he was going to. He had x-rays of them.
So
he's saying, you know,
they're not there anymore.
Well, he said that they took them, but he said they left two wires behind, like the wires that were connected to – there was a square piece of metal that was in his in his knee. He said that the wires were still there because when he eventually tried to get x-rays, he said he couldn't get any doctors to just do random x-rays on him without a – after when he thought that they were removed, that he couldn't get x-rays done because he needed an order from a doctor and they wouldn't just do x-rays for no reason, is the claim. So he said he went to a chiropractor because they order x-rays all the time. And the chiropractor actually had some x-rays done and he said it was gone. And Terry's like, so they took it? And he's like, well, he goes, I think they actually gave you the upgrade, the 2017 or 2012 version. He said, because there's still two wires there where the implant was. And maybe, you know, technology for them is advancing also. And so, I mean, that's the claim. There's a lot of claims, you know. You could find holes or you could find a lot of stuff that sounds credible. It's just with any of these. This case, I would, if we're going to do the scale, you know, I put Travis Walton really high. This is around the same time. It was a few years after. But the story didn't come out to 2012, 2017, I think is when this book came out. But, I mean, I put Travis Walton a lot higher. For me, that's the pinnacle. That's, you know, the Betty and Barney Hill. Betty, Barney Hill, and Travis Walton for me are like the big ones. I put this at like maybe a 5 or 6. You know, I mean, he has a lot of the same stuff, but I mean, he's had a lot of time to put the story together if he is putting it together. I mean, it could all be true. It could be a story.
So you're considering it plausible, but far from.
The x-rays, actual. The x-rays would be tough to fake. And there's real x-rays out there, you know, you can see them and there's stuff in his knee and there is that floral pattern on his calf or whatever. And that'd be pretty hard to fake. Not that it can't be, you know, something could be on the outside of the skin and the x-ray taken is going to show up maybe looking like it's in there. But the fact he said that no doctor would give him a clearance because he had heart issues later on in life, so they wouldn't get him a clearance to have him removed. But I see that shit in the hospital all the time. They work on people who have heart issues all the time. It does not stop them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it would have to be a whole lot of people wrapped up in denying that to happen. So if there was something in your knee, I don't think whether you had a heart problem or not, they'll go get it. You know, you can be 95. They'll still work on your heart nowadays. So. There's some money in it. They'll do it.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, the 1970s were a hotbed of the UFO activity. A lot of the most famous stories, especially the abductions, are 1970s.
So you could look at it a couple ways, too, because I think about that. You could look at it as that was when they were doing their experimentation. You know, that's when they decided they were going to. Or that was when the first Betty and Barney Hill came out in the 70s, and that's when you get a lot of copycat stuff.
Oh, sure.
You know? The problem is with any case like this, evidence is tough to come by. He has the x-rays. Like I said, they're pretty convincing looking x-rays, but at the same time, like I said, you could fake anything like that. Yeah. So, and by the time that this stuff was released was a lot later on. It wasn't released in the 70s. It was released, you know, much later, where there is Photoshop and there is all this other stuff that they could do. So I'm gonna put it at about a 6 out of 10.
Well, that was a good story though. I like that one.
All right, man. We will wrap that one here, and we're going to head over to the fire pit. If you guys want to send in your stories to have a read on air or played on air, you can record them, you can write them, you can send them however you want. Send them to beyondtheshadows207@gmail.com or send them to any of our socials. Please get your stories in, and we will catch you in the fire pit.
So this week's fire pit comes from Christy from the UK. She's already told one fire pit, and it was an excellent story. So here she is again.
So that's one. I've also got one from my dad, who, again, complete skeptic, definitely doesn't believe anything paranormal. He's the most sort of logical person you've ever met. And again, he told me that there was one instance that he just couldn't explain when he was young. So he said that it was Christmas Day, and he probably would have been about 7 or 8. And his dad and his brother had gone to the pub for Christmas Day. That's like quite a big thing in the UK. A lot of people go drinking on Christmas Day. So they'd gone to the pub, and it was just him and his mum at home. His mum was very, very ill, so she couldn't walk up and down the stairs. So she slept downstairs in like a makeshift bed at the time. So he'd gone upstairs to play with a train set, and he was playing with it in his bedroom. And at the door, it was the crack under the door was quite wide, so you could see light coming through it. It sort of made like a light beam under the door. And so he was playing with that, and he said that he heard someone walking up the stairs, and then they walked across and just stood outside his bedroom for quite a while. And he knew that someone was standing there because you could see the silhouette of like feet standing on the shadows of the light that was coming under his door. And he said that they just stood there. And so he sort of was waiting for someone to come in the bedroom, and just no one did. And then they just walked down the hallway as if they were going to another room, and that was it. There was no more noise. So he was like, what was that? So he went downstairs to his mum and was like, is Dean or Dad home? And she was like, no. And he was like, well, no, because someone's upstairs. And she's like, well, there's not. Like, no one's come in the door. He's gone upstairs to check, and there's literally nobody there. And obviously it wasn't his mum, she couldn't get up and down the stairs. And he said that is the only time that he's ever had anything that he just can't explain. And like I said, he's such a logical person that it just like doesn't, it just, it makes it so much scarier because he just can't, he was just like, I can't have any explanation for what it was or who it was. And he did say that the house that they were living at the time was a really, really old house in London. So that really creeped me out.
Wow, another great story from Christy. We love you. I mean, thank you.
It was Christmas. I think it was Santa.
It could have been. Just maybe.
No, it was a great story.
And we need more stories like that from the rest of you guys. Like I said, send them in to beyondtheshadows207@gmail.com or any of the socials. We really appreciate that story. And get them in, guys, so we can get them aired.
Absolutely.
All right. We will catch you in the next one.
Later, guys.